Right now, express a desire to catch a falling star, and you're in archetypical territory, a world of song titles, poetry, and fairy tales.
Oh, Tristan, a shooting star. Ah, oh, beautiful.
Victoria, for your hand in marriage, I'd cross the wall and I'd bring you back that fallen star.
Neil Gaiman crossed that wall a long time ago. He came to our attention with the celebrated Sandman comic books and has since written several books, some for grown-ups, some for children. Stardust, he describes as a fairy story for adults. It's about witches and magic and pirates and princes and ghosts and living happily ever after. It's now a movie starring Michelle Pfeiffer and Robert De Niro, among others. If you have questions for Neil Gaiman about writing novels, comic books, or about making movies, our number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. The email address is talk@npr.org. Neil Gaiman joins us from the studios of Minnesota Public Radio in St. Paul. Nice to have you back on the program.
It's nice to be back, Neil.
And congratulations.
Thank you. It's really fun.
Making a movie, you are not just the writer of the original book. You're listed as a producer in this movie.
I think I actually got to do some sort of cool producery things too, which is, producer can mean anything.
Mm-hmm. I was wondering what it meant.
It can mean absolutely anything. I'm an executive producer on the Beowulf film that I wrote that's coming out in November, and I have no idea what that means. But it's very nice of them. But with Stardust, I really was a producer. And what I did that I think was probably the most important thing was once I decided that Matthew Vaughn was, I was going to let him direct it, I then went and found him a writer. I decided I didn't want to write it myself. Nobody should have to do that to their own children.
I was going to ask, but you must have known that, in fact, this additional writer was going to, well, you knew that they had to trim the story quite a bit one way or another. It's just too long to fit on film. But they changed your beginning and then they changed your ending, among other things.
Absolutely. And I couldn't have done that. And I also knew that it had to be done. Last year, because I love books on tape and audiobook things. Mm-hmm. I actually recorded the entirety of Stardust the novel as an audiobook, and the hero isn't born for 40 minutes in. He and our heroine do not actually meet for several hours, and you can't really do that. And there's also in the book, there's an enormous amount of pleasure gained, I think, from the reader by watching how characters doom themselves, some of the evil characters, little actions here and there, which wind up meaning that they none of them wind up getting what they want, which is enormously pleasurable for a reader, or at least as the author, I like to think so. And I think would have been incredibly frustrating if you'd been sitting there in a cinema going, well, hang on, aren't these people even going to ever wind up in the same room?
and sending out for a lunch. And the other problem, though, you obviously were aware of what was going on. Were you there when they were filming?
I got to be there as they set up for filming. And then as they all headed off for first day of shooting up to the Isle of Skye and off the west coast of Scotland, I had to go off to a literary festival in Melbourne, Australia. And I didn't get back until almost the end of shooting several months later, which was rather wonderful. So I got to see some amazing stuff with Michelle Pfeiffer in an inn and the huge scene in the witch's lair at the end, which is rather wonderful. People keep saying, why didn't you do a cameo? And I have to explain that because there weren't any scenes with crowds. People would have said, who is that bloke in the leather jacket sitting in the corner of that pub?
And I wonder, so this also avoided the possibility of you standing there on the set and saying, wait a minute, you've got to put this character back in.
Oh, there was a certain amount of that. And there was a certain amount of that in both ways. After Jane Goldman had written the script with Matthew, I actually flew over to England, sat in Matthew's office with Jane, and we read the entire script aloud. With me trying to take the male parts and Jane trying to take the female parts, but that didn't always work. And there was a lot of, no, you have to change that. No, you can't do this. And a lot of arguing. And sometimes I won and sometimes I lost. Mm. And there were other arguments and things which happened as we went where sometimes the budget wasn't there.
Yeah.
There were gorgeous scenes that we wanted to do, that were written, that we were ready for. And there's in the book, there's a lion and a unicorn fight. And we couldn't do that in the film because it would have been $1.5 million for 90 seconds and we had other things to spend the money on. So at that point, you sort of grit your teeth and you're grateful that you're an author. I mean, the lovely thing about being an author for me is that if I make up a lion and a unicorn fight, it doesn't cost any more to write than anything else.
A couple of pieces of paper, that's about it. And maybe a few afternoons. We're talking with Neil Gaiman. He's the author of the novel Stardust and producer of the new film By That Name, which appears in theaters, what is it, Friday?
On Friday, yes.
On Friday. Well, all right. Let's see if we can get some listeners in on the conversation. 800-989-8255. Email is talk@npr.org. Let's start with Jennifer. Jennifer is with us from Louisville in Kentucky.
Yes, that's correct.
Go ahead, please.
I just want to say that I am a big fan, and I'm really excited to be asking you this question, but do you feel that writing longhand helped you to tap into the zeitgeist of a bygone era before there was the fantasy novel?
Mm-hmm. Not quite a bygone, an era that never really was. But anyway, Neil Gaiman.
No, I think
what Jennifer's saying, and yes, I do, is what I tried to do when I was writing Stardust was to write a fairy tale for adults. And I wanted to try and write it from a mindset that predated the idea of a fantasy novel. I wanted to write it from a mindset from back when authors would just every now and then they'd write a fairy tale. They'd write something with magic in. And it didn't go on the fantasy shelves in the bookstores because there weren't any fantasy shelves in the bookstores. Everything was fiction. When Lord of the Rings first came out, it was reviewed in the Times in England by W.H. Auden as a major novel. Nobody thought of it as a fantasy novel. And yes, I did. I went out. Up until that point, I'd probably been writing for about 10 years on computers. And I wanted to try and get my head into a sort of 1920s frame of mind. And I went out and I bought my first fountain pen since I'd been at school and a large blank leather-bound notebook. And I sat down in a house in London that I'd borrowed from a friend and I started to write. And it was really interesting. I learned that the rhythms of a sentence that you're handwriting, especially handwriting in ink that you don't want to make a mess of,
mm-hmm.
are different because you think about it more going in. And you try... I find it very easy to type a lot when I'm on a computer. But if I'm handwriting, I'll try and cut things to the bone. And if I'm typing up what I've handwritten, I'll leave stuff out. So I was really, one of the things I was most pleased with about Stardust was that I finished a novel and it was about 55,000 words. And that's really kind of slim. And I had this vague feeling that if I'd written it on a computer, it would have become one of these brick-sized trilogies that you could hit somebody with.
Thank you, Jennifer, for the call. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Let's try. This is Kat. Kat's with us from Kansas City.
Hello there. I just wanted to say... Neil Gaiman, I love you. If you would come,
thank you, Kat.
We'd appreciate that very much. Also, I want to ask if you have any plans to write anything more in the American Gods realm. Anything else other than
I do. I mean, Anansi Boys, which was my last big novel for adults, was it was touted as a sequel to American Gods, and it really wasn't. It just had some of the characters in. Yes, I really do. I want to write another American Gods novel. But before I can get there, I have to finish the children's novel that I'm currently working on, which is called The Graveyard Book, which is a great big, scary, weird, fun novel about a small boy who is, whose family had been killed, runs away to a graveyard and is brought up by dead people. So I'm working on that right now. And once that's done, it'll be time for the next novel. And I'm not really sure what it's going to be other than I want it to be big and thick. And it may well be an American Gods novel. I think that's certainly high on the list of the next books I want to do. I love Shadow from American Gods, and there's a lot of loose ends in American Gods. Mm. And when I wrote American Gods, I felt like I was writing about America circa 1999, and the landscape You know, 10 years on is very different. So I think it'll be very interesting to come back to that.
Wow. Well, we look forward to it. Come to Kansas City, okay?
I will. Thank you.
Thanks for the call, Kat. Here's an email they have from, who is this, Casey. This is a question, comment for Neil Gaiman. Neil, I love your work. She's talking about you and not me, and also about the work of Ms. Tori Amos. While reading Stardust, I projected Tori's persona on the character of the tree, and I was hoping her voice would make a cameo in the film. Alas, I was disappointed to hear that scene did not make it. My question is, are there moments in the book that, when lost in translation to the screen, you wish had worked out? You already mentioned the fight between the unicorn and the lion. What else?
Well, actually, that was probably the other big one. That was in there until we were about halfway through shooting. And it was a beautiful scene with the tree, and we were going to get Tori in to play the tree. And it was a lovely scene. And then I got a phone call from my daughter, Holly, who was working as a production assistant on Stardust, saying, "Dad, see where the tree's, scene where the tree's gone." And I wrote impassioned letters to everybody, and they wrote back and said, "Yes, we know. See where the tree's gone." And it's honestly, it's what happens in movie making. It's one of those things where when you're writing a book, the thing that you are writing is the thing that people will read. It's like the raw code that people will assemble into the thing in their head. And if you're writing a comic script, or you're writing a radio play script, or even if you're writing a play script, you're writing something that's very much like a sort of architectural schematic for the thing that people are going to do. You're telling them what to do, and they will go off and do it. When you're writing a movie script, it tends to be an awful lot closer to having a battle plan. The night before the battle, you've drawn it up and you're saying, okay, we're going to come over this hill and we're going to come down here with horses, and the enemy's going to be here on the left. And of course, what happens is the enemy aren't there, and you break your foot halfway down, and then it starts to rain. And making a movie is, it's sort of like trying to make art with a small army, and there's never enough time, and there's never enough money, and the light is always going.
We're talking with Neil Gaiman. His novel Stardust appears as a movie this Friday. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Another thing, though, that happens during the movieization of a novel, if you'll forgive me the word, is that characters who you've had in your mind and envisioned in your mind, and of course the book was illustrated from the very beginning and very well, too, by Charles Vess, and that is you have these characters taking on new personas in the form of, well, in this case, a couple of really good actors. This is a Ricky Gervais and Robert De Niro. Robert De Niro is playing Captain Shakespeare, at that time still believed to be a about the worst pirate ever, very bad reputation, and Ricky Gervais is sort of a con man. Here they are negotiating.
I think it's still crackling, very much alive, still tray fresh. So, name your best price.
For 10,000 bolts.
10,000 bolts of finest quality, grade A.
Best price, 150 guineas.
Gentlemen, put the merchandise back on board and prepare to sail.
Hold on. 1 minute. Hold on, Cuddles. 160.
Seeing as I'm feeling particularly generous today, I'll settle for 200.
200? Okay. You're having a laugh. Have you had your head in that? Has he been saying that where the air's too thin?
You're being very rude.
Not anymore.
200.
180.
200.
That's not negotiation. I'm changing my number. 185.
Did I hear 200?
From you did, yeah.
You said 200.
If I did, you're a ventriloquist. Okay, 195, final offer.
195 it is. So with sales tax, that's, let's see, 200.
Brilliant. Put it in the back.
That's great stuff. And do they take these characters to places you never expected them to go?
Oh, absolutely. And it's both disconcerting and really, really amazing. Sometimes you really feel like they've gone and found the character. You've gone and found the thing in your head. There's an actress named Melanie Hill playing Ditchwater Sal, this old witch, who is, she's what I had in my head when I wrote it, and she's made flesh, and it's amazing. Charlie Cox, playing Tristan, our hero, is absolutely, he's what I wanted Tristan to be. He starts out gawky, he becomes a hero, he's fundamentally nice and decent all the way down, and it's enormously fun. And then you get actors like De Niro, who takes a Jane Goldman took a fairly small part in the book and expanded it and had much, 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 much too much fun with it.
And so does
he. And then De Niro took it, and he had much, much, much too much fun with it. And it's just one of those things that makes me... I would never have done it, but it makes me smile every time it happens, and he's just marvelous. And then you get characters like Michelle Pfeiffer, who I wrote the witch, this witch queen that's out to cut the heart of the star out so she and her sisters can have eternal youth. And I wrote her as one thing, and what Michelle does is completely different, completely magical, and in some ways has started to colonize those parts of my head.
Hmm.
Now, when I think about that character, it's definitely half the character that I wrote, she now has Michelle Pfeiffer's smile, and she has Michelle's sort of strange, wonderful cat-like way of moving. And I love that. It's very odd, I have to say. I mean, this is really the first time that particular thing has happened to me.
And we're going to get a chance to see all this for ourselves on Friday when Stardust opens around the country. Neil Gaiman is the author of the original novel and a producer on the film. Good luck.
Thank you so much.
Neil Gaiman joined us today from the studios of Minnesota Public Radio in St. Paul, Minnesota. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Neil Conan in Washington.